Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls because we have with us this afternoon certainly one of my favorite guests, and I hope he'll be your favorite guest as well, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Dr. Cuddy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, now, of course, you've written a great new book on prior knowledge, and the idea that anybody in government could possibly have had any suspicion of that something might happen, well, this is just so foreign to any, you know, because we've been told by the administration, well, certainly we knew that something might happen, but we never expected that they would, use airplanes and attack our buildings. I mean, that was the furthest thing from our minds. And then, of course, we find out that on the 6th of August, well over 5 weeks before the attack, why the president was warned about the possibility of hijacking our planes. But, of course, in your book, Prior Knowledge, you have so many other things. And so I'm going to let you tell us about a few of those things, especially about that article. I think it came from a book that was written by a man named Josef Badansky, who was director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. So what are some of the things that you've uncovered that show that certainly somebody would have to have had knowledge that they were going to do this? In fact, Badansky had written about this back in the early 1990s. So what was this all about?
Well, you're absolutely right. The idea that nobody could have imagined a plane flying into a building is very strange because, and a lot of people say this, if you're critical now, it's amounts to Bush bashing, but this Budansky book, the first one, he did a later one called Bin Laden, but this particular one was called Target America in 1993. It came out, and he has been director of the U.S. House of Representatives Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. In 1993 is the first year of the Clinton administration, and it's also prior to the Republicans taking over the House. And in this particular volume, he is talking about these terrorists who are called Afghans. They were from other countries as well, but most of them were nicknamed Afghans. And there was a training going on early in the 1980s in Iran, so this isn't strictly in the Afghanistan effort here. And what they were doing was training pilots to take passenger or transport aircraft filled with passengers and hijack them and crash them into selected targets.
And so they were actually planning this in Iran. And, of course, you know, one of
right.
the biggest things for me, you know, is they keep talking about, oh, the terrible people in Afghanistan and the terrible Saddam Hussein, but they totally ignore the fact that Iran has been one of the major centers for this whole Islamic terrorist movement. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. There's a division sort of between Hezbollah and Hamas and Al-Qaeda and so on. And Iran has been more or less a breeding ground for a lot of this material. Now, 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia as well. So there's a spread across. But you're right, Iran is definitely one of the main perpetrating countries. And as Budansky said, even then in the 80s, they would have safe houses here, false identity papers, and infrastructure throughout the United States, weapons, ammunition, and so on. So this idea that this is a new item is perplexing, to say the least.
Well, of course, the other thing is, how would they know that they would have safe houses across America and weapons unless the FBI had infiltrated much of this whole mechanism even in the 1980s? cities, but of course they've never told the American people that. We know that they'd infiltrated the group in New York that was going to blow up the World Trade Center, and that did blow up the World Trade Center in February of 1993. But the problem with that was that the FBI knew that they were going to blow up the World Trade Center and did absolutely nothing to stop it. In fact, they fired their infiltrator, Mr. Sullum. And if anybody doubts that, you can simply give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll give you a copy of the article that appeared in the New York Times where that story is told in great detail, how the FBI knew they were going to blow up the building, had the opportunity to build a bomb that wouldn't go off, but then how can you have a terrorist attack if the bomb doesn't go off? So certainly there's so much the American people aren't told, but the fact that they were actually planning this in Iran in the early 1980s, if Budansky knew this, certainly everybody in intelligence had to know this, and certainly this book was available in the early 1990s, and you mean to tell me that nobody in the FBI or CIA knew that this was a possibility? Doesn't that seem just incongruous to you?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, you're right. Ralph Blumenthal's article on the front page of the New York Times goes into quite a bit how the FBI supervisor nixed the idea of the fake explosives, so the bomb actually went off. And I don't remember hearing any dire consequences to that supervisor as a result of that. As you also indicated, it's an excellent point that the only way we'd know these types of things if we had infiltrated it, the organizations and monitored them, surveilled them, and also in 93, after it went off, they find later some of the perpetrators of the 93 bombing laptop computer, Abdul Hakim Murad, who worked with Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of the 93 bombing. And in there, specifically, again, there was a plan, Project Bojanka, to hijack airliners and crash them into the World Trade Center, Pentagon, and other buildings here. So once again, you have this sort of curious response that nobody could have even imagined this type of thing would happen.
Now, of course, you're referring to the Murad who was captured over in the Philippines in 1995 in the operation that was known as Operation Bojanka. That was their description of what they were planning. Bojanka is a Philippine word for a big bang. And, of course, that was 1995, and weren't they even planning on crashing the plane specifically into the World Trade Center? And wasn't that information turned over to the FBI?
Sure. The World Trade Center, CIA, Pentagon, Sears Tower, Transamerica building, they knew all about this.
All right, fine. And so right now we're just going to have to take a quick break here. And let me just comment that if you'd like to get a copy of our guest's book, Dennis Dr. Cuddy's book, is called Prior Knowledge, and you can get that by giving us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's an inexpensive book. It's a very good book. You can either get it by itself, or you can get it part of what we call the Dennis Cuddy special, which will include my video of the war in Arabia, a copy of this tape, and then, of course, the book Prior Knowledge. And, of course, that'll give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, but you can get the book by itself, Prior Knowledge, and we recommend it to you because it has so much excellent information. Then, of course, let me mention that we carry the Phenopoly sets. We carry them because we think you need to be sure that your children and grandchildren can read phonetically. And this is a program by which children can learn to read, think, pronounce, and spell words phonetically. And this is a board game. It's played basically with dice, and it's played, it's really like Phenopoly, very, very similar to Monopoly, and you have apartment houses, and people get to land on your property, and really it's a fun game. But in the process, you begin to pronounce words, and you make the sounds, and you learn the 40 sounds of the English language and the 12 rules. The game will actually reprogram a child's mind, as far as we can tell, in 16 to 20 hours. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for a Phenopoly set. It's 5 board games, two bonus games, and 2 books we throw in. Well, let me tell you about some of the four tape sets we have. One special tape set is the Tuskegee Study, and it's four interviews with people who were involved with the Tuskegee Study, or at least who've gone into the background of this really most horrible of all American experimentation. We had the unique opportunity to interview a number of the men who were involved in analyzing the Tuskegee Study, a government-sponsored study where 400 black men were recruited, and they had syphilis, and of course, what they did not understand is that they were not being recruited to be treated, they were being recruited not to be treated, and the government agents did everything they could to block those men from receiving treatment for their syphilis. Call today at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's important that you understand that study so you can better understand the mentality of the men who are working behind the scenes in America today. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. We're talking about his book, Prior Knowledge. And of course, one of the stories you tell in the very beginning of the book is about a boy, and I think it was a schoolboy in New York, who a week before the attack looked out the window at school, pointed to the Twin Towers, and said, a week from now, those towers won't be standing. What's that all about?
Well, once again, that's an interesting story. It's simply one example. There, some of the police who investigated this found that there was a fair amount of this same type of information floating around the streets. This particular case was a ninth grade boy, a Pakistani immigrant to this country. He was in a class that was at New Utrecht High School in Brooklyn. And they were, it was largely immigrants in there, and they were in a rather heated discussion about world affairs, and the boy jumped up and pointed out the window, as you said, and looked at the World Trade Center towers and said exactly that. Next week, those towers will not be standing there. I mean, he didn't say in the near future or maybe next year or who knows, I hope that, or anything like that. It was rather specific about next week. The police interviewed him, and later on he confirmed that he said that. His father got very mad with the police interrogating his children, him and his brother. And then shortly thereafter, his father left and went to Pakistan. I'm not sure if he's still there or where he is, but that's simply one more instance of rather curious things in advance. Another curious thing is on September 10th, a number of top Pentagon people canceled their September 11th airplane flights. And you would think that might bode that something was in the works as well. So there's a fair number of indications as to specificity regarding the where, the how. We know the Project Bojinka gave the where and the how. The where and the how is also from German intelligence. Quite a bit prior to September 11th, they warned the CIA and Israel that terrorists, quote, were planning on hijacking commercial aircraft to use as weapons to attack important symbols of American Israeli culture, end quote. So there we have the where and the how. We also have the where from David Shippers, who 6 weeks prior to September 11th, and he was chief investigative counsel during the Clinton impeachment hearings, he had information from lower-level FBI people, and he, Shippers, was trying to pass it on to the upper-level people at Justice Department that there was a possible impending terrorist attack specifically targeting lower Manhattan, but he never could get through to the upper, to Ashcroft and the others.
And, of course, David Shippers knew all of these men. He had been the counsel for the congressional committee that impeached Bill Clinton in the House of Representatives. And yet, of course, when he tried to call these people, none of them wanted to talk to him. And you know, you're saying, look, there's going to be an attack on America. It's going to be in the lower part of Manhattan. You know, I want to talk to the top people. And none of them would talk to him. Was it that they didn't want to have to say, well, you knew what was going to happen and you didn't do anything about it? What was this story about the Canadian, the American naval officer in Canada? This is an intriguing story. Have you tracked that one down?
Well, that's, in my mind, as you know, when I do these books, I try and put their own words and the dates and so forth and get things verified. And that, to me, is still a little iffy. I'm not saying it's incorrect, but it's a little iffy in the sense that when I tried to reach the let me back up. What happened, and the way their story goes, is that there was an individual, a source for information within the Pentagon with a particular name, not a very typical name, sort of unusual, but not that unusual. And during the court proceedings for this individual who you're mentioning, in Canada, they had called, and sure enough, the Pentagon switchboard says, yes, there is this person there, which they took as verifying it. When I called the Pentagon switchboard, however, there were several people with that last name with different initials, and my problem was with verifying it, that my question was, what if the Pentagon operator simply assumed that since this other individual had the right last name, that that's the individual they wanted? And so when I contacted that individual, who the sources said they got to, he expressed some surprise. He said, oh, yeah, I've seen this on the Internet, and, you know, that's my name, and I wasn't there, and so forth. Now, who knows, but to me, that's still a little iffy, so I haven't verified it yet.
All right. Basically, this was a man who was arrested in Canada for some reason or other, and he claimed to be a United States naval officer on a secret intelligence mission, and supposedly, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Dennis, he had actually given his jailers an envelope and said, you'd open this after the 11th of September, and when they did, he said they're going to attack the Twin Towers.
Right.
Is that pretty much the story? And then, of course, when he went to trial, and he said, look, I'm a United States a naval officer here, and, you know, and, of course, as so often happens, if he really were a naval officer on an intelligence mission, why plausible denial? We never heard of him. And yet we've seen this happen time and time and time again. So, well, anyway, it's one of those stories that perhaps if we had $30 billion at our disposal, we could follow up. But certainly it's we don't have the intelligence facilities. The few things we have verified, like certainly the story that the mayor of Willie Brown was called 8 hours beforehand, before the attack, and told he should not actually be flying that day. And we actually verified that with the mayor's press secretary. They verified that we have the article out of the San Francisco Chronicle that covers that. And we know that somebody was doing damage control, because the article was pulled out of all the subsequent editions of the San Francisco Chronicle on the 12th of September. It was just published one time. And then somebody took that down, the article down off the Internet. So somebody is doing damage control. Would you think that would be a fair assumption?
Well, I don't know what other conclusion one can draw. And also, the mayor doesn't really want to talk about it anymore. So there's a lot of backing off of these things. And there's some others that you and I have discussed that we won't get into, because we need to verify that as well. But you're right. Way in advance, the British, for example, in their formal indictment against Osama, said that, quote, in August of 2001 and early September, close associates of bin Laden were warned to return to Afghanistan from other parts of the world by September 10th. Immediately prior to September 11th, some known associates of bin Laden were naming the date for action as on or around September 11th specifically. We also know that an Iranian, I think he's about 29 years old, was in custody of the German police, and they allowed him to call the U.S. Secret Service and others, and he tried to warn them of an impending September attack that would take place the week of September 10th, but when they found out he was about to be deported by the German police, our officials hung up on him. He then tried to fax a message just a few hours before the event to President Bush in the White House, but he was not allowed to do that. And then finally, as to the when, we know that a foreign intelligence agency intercepted a September 9th phone call between Osama bin Laden himself and his stepmother, where Osama was saying, quote, in 2 days you're going to hear some big news and you're not going to hear from me again for a while, end quote. So there's, in my opinion, there was enough there to know the what, when, and where, so that we should have done something.
Well, now, of course, this fellow that you mentioned, held by the German police, was that the article that appeared in the Insight magazine on December 3rd, written by Kenneth Timmerman? Is that what you're referring to, or is that a different incident?
That's a little bit different.
I know. Were there two people then, two intelligence officers, or two people who were there in Germany at the time? Do you know?
Well, this is a little different in the sense that the one you're referring to by Timmerman is by an intelligence officer. This fellow is just simply a 29-year-old Iranian who knew this information.
All right. Well, why don't you do you have that information by Timmerman? Because here's something any one of our listeners who's skeptical can check out on their own, the article, Insight Magazine, December 3rd. And do you have that story? You want me to tell it?
If you would, please. I don't have it right at my fingertips.
All right. Well, basically, there was this an intelligence officer who had defected from Iran to Germany, and he was in Bonn at the time, and he wasn't under custody, but he of course had asked for asylum there. And a week before the attack, he had called the FBI, and he got through to the FBI and told them that the Iranians were going to hijack their planes and crash them into the World Trade Center. Now, that was the story. And, of course, Kenneth Timmerman called the FBI, and they said, well, yes, we did get the call, but it wasn't until after September 11th. So that must have been a very, very slow transmission because, at least according to the intelligence officer, he called them a week beforehand, and they didn't get the call until a week later. There's something terribly wrong with the story. Either the intelligence officer is lying, or could it be that the FBI would be lying? Well, check these facts out. I mean, there's so many things there. And, of course, we have personally checked the Willie Brown story. Maybe nobody wants to talk about it now, but why I talked personally to Willie Brown's press secretary just a couple of days after the attack, which was what gave me the really the first inkling that somebody knew what had happened. Somebody knew the attack was coming, and somebody did nothing to prevent it. And somebody, of course, is doing damage control and trying to conceal that information from the American people today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and again, if you'd like to get Dr. Cuddy's book, it's called Prior Knowledge. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927, and you can either ask for the book or the special, the Dr. Dennis Cuddy special, and you'll get a copy of this tape interview. You'll get a copy of my video with the war in Arabia, and you'll get his book. Oh, so right now, of course, we hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will decide that you want to transfer your long-distance carrier over to Promise Vision. What's the advantage? Well, the rates are comparable. There are real honest people there that when you call in, why, they will talk to you. It's not going to be an answering machine. And, of course, it's a Christian long-distance carrier, but the real reason you want to transfer is because 15% of your long-distance bills will come back to Radio Liberty. Our telephone number is 866, or their number is 866-448-5631. That's 866-448-5631. We've been very happy with Promise Vision. We think you will be as well. And then we want to mention, of course, that we do carry the Miracle 2 soap products, and we've been very happy with them. We use them in our home ourselves. And, of course, it's wonderful, wonderful soap. Some people say it helps their rashes. We don't make any medical claims of that sort. But there are all sorts of little things. It certainly seems to help ants and white flies. And we have a lot of people who've been just so pleased with it. If you'd like more information, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. If you'd like to get the little packet we sent out, we hope many of you will want to go ahead and order the products, and you can get the soap, the moisturizer, the neutralizer, you can get the lotion and the gel. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 for an introductory packet of Miracle 2 soap products. On the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the unnecessary epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine. The fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine both at the state and national level. And the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the unnecessary epidemic, because you need to understand the background to this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're talking about his book, Prior Knowledge. Well, of course, you know, of course, you've really accumulated a great deal of other information in the background of this 7/11 attack, 9/11 attack. One of the most interesting things is so much of what's happened since then was actually scripted ahead of time. The whole plan for the Office of Homeland Security, this was being planned back in 1999 and the year 2000 by this United States Commission for Security in the 21st Century, and certainly the plans for the Model Emergency Health Powers Act that is being enacted in states all across America. This was all planned ahead of time. Certainly the changes that came with the Patriot Bill, this massive expansion of police power, was exactly what the Clinton administration tried to get through back in 1995 after the Oklahoma City bombing and couldn't. So the Bush administration got it through in the year 2001. What are some of the other things that concern you, Dr. Cuddy?
Well, all of the things that you mentioned, because they set precedents. A lot of this that's going on is being accepted because people who generally are traditionalists, constitutionalists, during times of crisis want to show their patriotism by supporting the president, and they, for various reasons, feel more comfortable, let's say, with President Bush than with President Clinton. But the problem is a lot of these things, the problems we've had over the past 40, 50 years happened under this same situation. It was Nixon, not a Kennedy, who opened the door to communist China and so on. And so what you have are precedents that are rather dangerous being set in this several cases. May 30th, Attorney General Ashcroft announced that the restrictions on the FBI's domestic spying and surveillance of religious and political organizations was going to be relaxed. And so what you have set there is a precedent whereby undercover agents would be able to investigate churches, for example, without having probable cause or evidence leading them to believe anybody in the church has broken the law. You have a precedent with this fellow, a Padilla, Puerto Rican, who became a Muslim, simply being identified now as a war combatant, and not even therefore given one of these strange military tribunals, but simply shuttled off to some undisclosed location where he can be kept, according to President Bush, until the war on terror has ended, which could be, you know, never. And he doesn't get a lawyer, he doesn't have a trial, and that sets a precedent. As you indicated, a number of things are occurring that in my previous book I was trying to warn a bit about. In the last book, The Globalist, which came out in July of 2001, 2 months prior to September 11th, where I had indicated that at the national level there was a conditioning going on of the American public, and it might be brought about via certain crises, I said, such as a terrorist attack, after which, for the sake of peace and security, people may be willing to give up certain of their freedoms to some extent. And sure enough, lo and behold, as you said, you know, these things didn't just happen, the Homeland Security. In this case, on September 11th, the afternoon, ABC, Washington Post comes out with a poll saying two-thirds of the American public would be willing to do just that, give up some of our freedoms for peace and safety. And these things often are brought about through crises. You have moves to limit our Second Amendment to rights whenever you have school shootings or something like that. And the Health Powers Act that you mentioned, forcible quarantines, vaccinations, whatever. Ordinarily, the American public wouldn't accept it, but lo and behold, now they are. My sense is this sort of coincidental Enron and WorldCom economic crises and scandals might be the forerunner of some measures to be taken as well. And it's an erosion of our basic constitutional freedoms and rights that I'm mainly concerned about.
And I agree with you totally. And, of course, there's so many things that are going on that I think should give everybody concern. Are you aware of that remarks by ex-Senator Gary Hart on the 14th of September, just 3 days after the September 11th attack, as he's addressing the Council on Foreign Relations, the invisible government, many refer to it, a special meeting they had convened in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, that's not too far off from the original planning of the Homeland Security, where he and some others in the commission and Warren Rudman are talking about that's the one where he's talking about now. This President Bush has the chance to institute what his father wanted, this New World Order.
Now, I think the exact phraseology was the President may be able to use this
right.
tragedy. The President may be able to use this tragedy to bring about what his father had discussed, and I think it was perhaps only once, and that is a New World Order. Well, of course, the father had mentioned it over 100 times,
right.
But of course, they didn't want to mention that. And what was really so interesting about that was that the Council on Foreign Relations got the wrong name on their website. In other words, they really didn't want the American people to know that Gary Hart had said such a crass thing at that time, just 3 days after all those people died, the President can use this tragedy. But of course, they are using the tragedy to accomplish just that. We're moving rapidly towards the world government and the transfer of our national sovereignty. And isn't that what the fast-track legislation that they're trying so hard to get through is all about? Really to tear down the tariff barriers and the economic barriers and the national barriers and borders here in the United States through fast track?
Absolutely. The plan years ago was to have a world government. They would get that by having a world economy. They would get that by regional economic arrangements, which would expand NAFTA and then GATT, World Trade Organization, European Union, and so on, and then they would link those things up. So the fast track is to expand these trade agreements whereby Congress is given basically a fait accompli, you know, vote for the whole thing or nothing, because, you know, I've negotiated as the President, and it's a sort of take it or leave it situation. And as you indicated, Hart's words about use this are rather important, because that's what we often do. The power elite create situations from which a reaction will occur, and then they use that to further their goals. And a lot of times, and I mentioned this a little bit in the book, it has to do with oil. For example, a lot of people say, well, we went into Kosovo because this horrible ethnic cleansing was going on, and that's why we just had to support these rather radical Muslims who were...
You mean Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda terrorists,
yeah.
and for the drug smugglers, and
yeah.
those are the ones we were backing in Kosovo. Yeah, I never did quite understand that.
Yeah, that's one of our great allies, just like some of our other allies that we've had, and that had to do with oil as well, because... prior to the idea that we would get the Caspian Sea reserves out of there through a pipeline, so we didn't want to go through Iran. So the idea was through the through Afghanistan, but the Taliban was more or less blocking that. One of the alternatives prior to that was to go through the Black Sea and Bulgaria, and then over through Kosovo. And so we seemingly had a great interest in the ethnic cleansing that was going on there, but we didn't have the same desire to prevent the 700,000 death slaughter that was going on in Rwanda, or the ethnic cleansing of the Sudan. But in Somalia, which had the second largest oil reserves, there we showed some interest in what was going on in that country. And so to give the background of that very briefly, because I know that's not basically the subject, but it's important to show this. What you have to do is create a situation. It's sort of like creating an autocratic, dictatorial, oppressive regime in Saudi Arabia. You know something's going to happen. Osama and others are going to object to it, and so there's a reaction, and then use the reaction. Same thing with here. People say, well, how did we get into Kosovo? Well, it wasn't just oil. You have to remember, and I put this in the previous book, again, The Globalist Power, in about 1992-ish. And this is prior to the Clinton administration, but a lot of the key players, Madeleine Albright and others, were on a couple of Carnegie commissions. And they issued a couple of reports which said, you know, if there were this humanitarian crisis in which there was ethnic cleansing, then maybe NATO, sort of as like a peacekeeping surrogate for the UN, could intervene. Now, if you're a KLA member and you read that, you know exactly what you need to do, and they did.
All right, fine. Well, of course, Dr. Cuddy has a number of books which we carry. The Globalists, Secret Records Revealed, Now is the Dawning, NEA, and then there's sort of a timeline for education, and of course we also carry his new book, Prior Knowledge. Let's go to Richard, who's calling from Miami. Richard, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, Yeah, I have a question. I want to get into W199I. What is all that we know about it, and how credible is it?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. What is the question?
The FBI secret document.
Okay, well, what is it? Okay, now you're going to have to tell me about that. I don't know. What is that?
Oh, Alex it's an Alex Jones video.
All right, fine. Well, let's get Dr. Cuddy to explain it and tell us. Is this credible or not?
I went on and put that in the book. There are people, knowledgeable people, who said they haven't been able to verify it, but to the extent that it's a secret document, anyway, you only got, you know, so much ability here. And so when you have people, Joe Trento, who wrote a book about the CIA, and a fellow named Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T, actually being a rather respected person in Europe. I think he left the U.S., went over to Europe because he was running into problems here with getting information that should have been available. And when he works and produces something for the BBC, and he has respectable sources like that, and they talk about this particular document, 199I, and there's more to it, that actually indicates various maneuverings, Saudi support of terrorist organizations. There's a lot to it. It involves the U.S. in the sense that Abdullah bin Laden, Osama's younger brother, was head of WAMI, the World Association of Muslim Youth, and they were at 5613 Leesburg Pike, just across from Washington, and three blocks away. Four of the terrorists are there. There's money laundering going on through Islamic charities and so forth, that there's a connection there, and there's more to it. But basically, I went on and included it because if the BBC is going to do this and they have sources that they've checked out, and I haven't heard any, you know, great denials by the people they're accusing, it's probably accurate, but, you know, it's because it's a secret document, you really can't get your hands on it.
Well, basically, does it tell anything, foreknowledge of the 9/11 attack, or is it simply all these various terrorist organizations and the funding for them that we're allowing to take place?
It was more that than the document doesn't say on September 11th there's going to be an attack.
Okay, fine. Thank you so much, Richard.
It was like George W. Bush saying, you know, don't do any investigation
for the FBI. Well, we know that the administration did everything they could to keep the many of the FBI agents from investigating terrorism ahead of time, Islamic terrorism. They spent all their time and seemed to be investing Christians. Well, we're going to have to take another break here. And of course, we just want to mention that at this time that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you believe in what we're doing, if you believe that freedom today is already hanging by a string, then we will lose our freedom if we don't awaken the American people. We hope that many of you will decide right now, if you're not already members of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, you're going to join and help us. And of course, for a gift of $20 a month or more, you can get our four best tapes in a month, and you will get our monthly newsletter. Incidentally, I'm just finishing up the latest one now, and you won't want to miss this one, I'll tell you, because it tells you a secret that's been concealed for 40 years that affects every person in the listening audience. And if you want a free copy of that, that's the June letter, and it'll be available in a couple of weeks. And if you don't already subscribe, why, you can get the, we'll just drop us a note. We'll send you a copy of the letter, but we hope you want to subscribe to the newsletter, or better still, you'll join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And you do that by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we hope that if you are already a member, and if there's any way you can see your way to increasing your donations so that we're going to be able to expand our programs, and I'm hoping and praying. Now, we already have our one program that's going to be syndicated on Saturday, and then we're hoping to pull down another network, and those will really almost really massively expand our Saturday programs. We have to reach people one at a time, because the other side controls the mass media, and of course they bought it up a long time ago, and that's why it is so immoral and anti-Christian. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we'd love to welcome you into the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, most people would laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who is Bill Clinton's mentor, you understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. Well, Dr. Stan, and our guest today is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and of course, we welcome your calls at 464-8295, that's 464-8295, or out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you want to give us a call, of course, we would love to hear from you. Dr. Cuddy's other books, other than the one we're talking today, which is Prior Knowledge, are The Globalists, The Secret Records Revealed, which is one of my favorite books, Now is the Dawning book, one on NEA, and of course another one that deals with the chronology of the schooling, with taking over of education. And did I miss any books there, Dennis?
That's it.
Okay, fine. And of course, you'll want to get Prior Knowledge, and you can either get it by itself or as what we're going to call the Dennis Cuddy Special. And I'll have to call over to the people at the exchange and tell them about that. But you can order it, and it'll include the copy of this audio tape and my video, The War in Arabia, and Dennis's book, and that'll only be $29.95. Or you get the book by itself. It's an inexpensive book. We think you'll really enjoy it. Well, you know, of course, then after you get through any of the all the various things that point to the fact there certainly was prior knowledge, we begin getting into this move towards world government in your book. But are there any other points you'd like to make about the fact that there certainly was evidence that somebody, now I don't know who it was, but somebody in government knew that there was going to be an attack, and they had a pretty good idea how it was going to be carried out?
Well, yeah, they again, there's a lot of curious things. We've talked before about how we actually funded the textbooks in the 1980s of, let's say, 10-year-old Afghans against the Soviets at the time. It was the same time that Osama's people were being brought over here to the U.S. by the CIA and trained to engage in, as they would say, terrorist acts against the Soviets. We were contributing to this indoctrination of the youngsters on jihad and get rid of the infidels and so forth. And then, you know, 25 years later, we're very surprised when they're now, 15 years later, when they're 25 years old, that they've got this attitude that they have that causes them to do this sort of thing. Something else is concerned that what the press doesn't tell you, we've heard the press cover Colleen Rowley a bit and what happened in Minneapolis or what didn't happen, and we've heard about the Kenneth Williams and the Phoenix memo and that, but one of the things that the press has not been playing up too much is the Chicago FBI agent, so I want to bring that in briefly. Robert Wright and another fellow named Carmody and some others in the FBI had tried to follow, as your previous caller, when he was asking about that special case the FBI had tracking the money trail and the laundering through Islamic charities. And he, at some time ago, way prior, and he's one of the people with David Shippers, was trying to tell them what was going to happen and what the money was being used for and laundering and terrorist activities. And the word this FBI agent used, Robert Wright used, was that these lives, the American lives lost, were needlessly lost on September 11th. And he was at a press conference May 30th of this year where he said he was actually ordered to stay in Chicago and he was threatened with criminal prosecution if he came out publicly about what the agency had or had not been doing. And I want to read just this one thing. usually don't like to read a lot, but this is important because somebody asked him why, what was going on. And Judicial Watch Chairman General Counsel Larry Klayman was there at the National Press Club at this conference, and they asked why there was this blockage of pursuing this, of what happened September 11th. And he said, quote, "The monies were going through some very powerful U.S. banks with some very powerful interest in the United States. These banks knew or had reason to know that these monies were laundered by terrorists. And there are very significant potential conflicts of interest in both the Clinton and Bush administrations with the country primarily responsible for funding these charities, namely Saudi Arabia. And we have both Clinton and Bush, and in particular this Bush administration, who is as tight with Saudi Arabia as you can get. This president's father, the former President Bush, used to stay with the bin Laden family when he would go to Saudi Arabia. That may help explain why the FBI were nervous about getting into this stuff when the rich and powerful of Washington, D.C. are in fact doing business with some of these entities," end quote. And so that gives a little idea about this overlay of political correctness, sensitivity at the top, whereby Rowley and Kenneth Williams and Robert Wright and Carmody and some of the underlings are trying to do a good job, trying to pursue this, sort of like John O'Neill, who was so disgusted in August that he resigned from the FBI and became head of security at the World Trade Center and died in the September 11th attacks. A lot of lower-level people seem to have wanted to get through this, to pursue this, but they were blocked either under Clinton because of a closeness perhaps with the American Muslim Council, which has in turn supported Hamas, or in this case, with the Bushes and the Saudis, so to such an extent that while after September 11th they detained many Middle Eastern males for many, many months, simultaneously the FBI gathers together sort of secretly the roughly 24 members of the bin Laden family in this country onto a plane, down to Texas, then over to the Saudi embassy in Washington and out of the country fast. Now you'd think maybe some of them might have known something. So there's, you know, something at the top level which is blocking this.
And I think you're absolutely right. When you refer to Crowley and Williams, you're referring, of course, to people who are in the FBI. Let me just comment. We carry a book. It's called The American Jihad. It's by Stephen Emerson. And there, in the appendix, they actually have the testimony given before the Senate Intelligence Committee, the same committee that is holding all these closed-door sessions today. And, of course, this, back in 1996, this Muslim, American Muslim, is testifying under oath before this Senate committee, and he's saying, "Oh, this whole Islamic terrorist movement and Hamas are all being financed from right here in the United States today. And we want you to know, I mean, these people have hijacked the Muslim religion, and they are actually being all financed from right here in America today." Well, you know, it's amazing that sort of thing never gets into the papers. And we know that the FBI had been watching the Holy Land Foundations. It's financing Hamas, which is behind so many of the bombings over there, you know, in Israel and elsewhere, and did absolutely nothing about it until after the, and they knew this in 1993. So we allowed all of this to go on, and Dr. Cuddy was talking about those textbooks. In Afghanistan, in 1985, we started putting out $56 million for textbooks to indoctrinate young Islamic boys in Afghanistan and Pakistan with hatred of the West, with support for the radical Islamic movement, the Wahhabism, which had existed prior to that only in Saudi Arabia. We would teach them to count using knives and landmines and rifles and bullets, you know, two knives, three landmines, and four bullets is how many weapons. And they even have, you know, they even had the pictures of all the weapons in there. And, of course, the hatred of the infidels was one thing you've really stressed. And then we're surprised that when these people grew up that they hated infidels and they looked upon America as infidels. And if any of you want to question that, we have the article out of the Washington Post, or you can go to my April newsletter at www.radioliberty.com, and we quote extensively from that Washington Post article. And ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand, we created the finest enemy money can buy. And if you doubt it, the book Dollars for Terror, which we carry, written in 1999, gives that whole story, or the book on Holy Wars, which also written in 99, we do not carry, but it's an excellent book. You know, points out that, I mean, how did the Sheikh, who was behind the first World Trade Center bombing, get to the United States? I mean, he was a known terrorist. How did he get here? Why, of course, the CIA apparently helped him to come over here, just as the CIA and the American government, you know, were bringing terrorists into America in the late 1980s. And in 1995, we allowed one of the men who planned the episode you saw in Black Hawk Down, Dr. Al-Zawahiri, Bin Laden's right-hand man, we allowed him to come to the United States in 1995 and tour our country and raise money for terrorism and recruit terrorists. And he was, we knew he had planned that escapade, that ambush for our men and that in Somalia. And we also knew that he was a known murderer, had been convicted by the Egyptian government and wanted for murder. So why would we bring a known murderer here? Unless, of course, nothing is as it appears. Well, Dr. Cuddy, we're just about out of time. We're talking with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. His book, Prior Knowledge, is something you'll want to get. It's an inexpensive but very excellent summary of not only what happened on September 11th and the things that led up to it, but what's really behind this, the New World Order. Dr. Cuddy, do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, the parting thought would be, as you just said, things are not always as they seem. I try to give a good deal of that information. Do not respond in any way in a resistance to this New World Order effort with violence, because that would just be a pretext for cracking down still further. Prayer is absolutely essential. Ultimately, God is in control, and we must, I believe, remain informed and active. We can't just sit around and do nothing, because we are responsible for our inaction, and we can't just allow this to move forward without some sort of nonviolent resistance.
Amen to that. Thank you, sir, very much. God bless you, and we'll be talking to you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And, of course, our guest has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and certainly one of my favorite guests, and also Dennis, I believe, is the single finest researcher we have in the United States today, tracking down these stories. And I will have to admit that we're on the telephone two or three times, sometimes a day, or certainly several times every week, and verifying his work, or he's verifying our work. So, you know, you want to get his information, his books. We mentioned The Globalists, Secret Records Revealed, Now is the Dawning, and of course the latest one, Prior Knowledge, must reading for everyone out there. So, at this point, of course, we want to remind you that we are involved in a spiritual battle, because behind everything today are spiritual forces, and of course we're fighting it on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, but it's really a spiritual battle. And you are called to be involved. We are called to be the watchman on the wall in Ezekiel 3 and Ezekiel 33. And if you're not doing anything, you're part of the problem. So please pray for America. Pray for our leaders. Pray for revival. Please pray for our ministers. And lastly, please pray for my ministry, for myself, my family, my staff. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye. And may the Lord be with you.